19 Hours 30 UTC on Wednesday, January 10th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Ousted President Robert Mugabe is cited in the court application as it was his government which presided over the massacres.
That was Sebastian Mofu reporting on a lawsuit filed to obtain more government records on the Gukurahundi massacre. We'll have more on that story and others coming up.
Good evening. I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA Zimbabwe Today.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has initiated another phase of its nationwide voter registration blitz. This comes after calls for the exercise to continue after it ended in December, having registered fewer people than expected. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashe has the report.
In preparation for elections later this year, Zimbabwe has been compiling a new voters' roll using biometric voter registration system known as BVR. Commissioner Emmanuel Magade is the acting chairperson of Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, the ZEC.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission embarked on a national biometric voter registration exercise during the period running from the 14th of September 2017 to the 19th of December 2017. This exercise resulted in a provisional total of 4,879,482 voters being registered countrywide.
He says, during the same period, the Registrar General was on a drive to issue identification cards to Zimbabweans around the country. He says, however, there were irregularities in the two campaigns.
The voter and civil registration exercises were initially not synchronized, resulting in some people being left out of the voter registration blitz or our period of intensity. After observing this anomaly and challenge, representations from various stakeholders on the BVR exercise to the commission were made.
Wednesday, the ZEC kicked off another registration blitz. It was ordered mainly because of the ID card problem, as well as the December High Court order allowing Zimbabweans classified as aliens to vote.
The commission is of the view that these representations are legitimate and well-founded. As a result, we have decided to embark upon a mop-up exercise that will be conducted in order to afford every Zimbabwean an opportunity to register to vote.
The mop-up exercise runs until the 8th of February. There were long lines of people this morning at one registration center in Harare. Danford Ngaidzore, a youth leader in the opposition movement for democratic change, has been monitoring the registration process.
We are very much happy. High turnout is very good, it's promising. And actually, we have more youth who have come to register to vote. So it's something which is very promising, considering the economic challenges which the country is facing.
The ZEC had initially aimed to register 7 million voters, but has since revised that target, saying it was overly ambitious. Magade says he will be happy to register more than 5 million people. Political activists hope this period will be enough to register Zimbabweans missed on the last round, as well as nearly 1 million people classified as aliens. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Voting rights activists say the voting registration blitz is particularly key in Bulawayo and surrounding districts. Many people in that region have struggled to get the proper birth certificates and other documents needed to register. That is partly a legacy of the Gukurahundi massacres in the 1980s, when government forces attacked scores of communities that opposed the ruling ZANU-PF party. Reporter Anastasia Ndlovu is in Bulawayo and spoke with our colleague, Kate Pound Dawson, about the start of the blitz.
Unlike in the first four phases of biometric voter registration, where Bulawayo was using 106 biometric voter registration kits, only six have been dedicated to the mop-up exercise, and the extension is a blessing to aliens who now have ample time to fix their birth certificate challenges, which is one of the requirements that allow them to register, as most of them have short birth certificates which do not state the nationality of their parents. Civic society organizations and political parties today went out in numbers around Bulawayo, conscientizing people to go and register to vote, following a low turnout in the last exercise in Bulawayo, in Matabeleland South and in Matabeleland North provinces, due to a number of challenges faced by the people in the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission.
What has caused the low turnout for registration in the region?
Major reasons for the low registration is apathy, poor publicity of biometric voter registration exercise, poor strategies in implementing the exercise by using traditional centers like schools and council halls contributed immensely to the low voter registration. And the fourth phase, when Zimbabwe Electoral Commission heeded calls from civic society and political parties, the number of registrants increased. In Matabeleland region, in some areas, the mobile registration exercise and documentation was not in sync with biometric voter registration exercise. In most places, the documentation process came after biometric voter registration, and most people have no documentation because the government has failed for decades to issue documentation, and most of the affected people had their documents destroyed during Gugurahundi genocide, affecting their immediate children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren.
If the registration numbers don't rise, what will that mean for the region, for Bulawayo and the surrounding provinces?
If registration numbers for the region do not increase, it means that Bulawayo, Matabeleland South, and Matabeleland North provinces will have less voters, and ZANU-PF might retain the seats that they won during the by-elections. And it also means that the Gugurahundi genocide victims and survivors will not be able to vote.
That was Anastasia Ndlovu in Bulawayo speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson.
Activists in southern Zimbabwe are taking legal action to demand the truth about a series of massacres in the 1980s that targeted perceived opponents of then-President Robert Mugabe. An estimated 20,000 civilians were killed by North Korean-trained troops under the authority of current President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who was Minister of Security at the time. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare for VOA.
In their application, the activists asked Zimbabwe's High Court to compel President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to release the findings of a commission of inquiry on the massacres. Dumisani Dube, lawyer for the pressure group Ibechuli Kazulu, is hopeful despite previous attempts which hit a brick wall. He says the situation has changed in Zimbabwe since 2013, when a new constitution was enacted.
In terms of new constitution of Zimbabwe, Section 62, there's a constitutional provision on the right to access to information, which entitles any person the right to access information which is held by state in the interest of public accountability, fairness, human dignity, and justice. So we're very positive.
Ousted President Robert Mugabe is cited in the court application as it was his government which presided over the massacres between 1982 and 1987. The atrocities which rights groups say claimed about 20,000 lives targeted members of the ethnic Ndebele population believed to support former Vice President Joshua Nkomo, then an opponent of Mugabe. They happened when Zimbabwe's current president was the Minister of Security. Lawyer Dube said he would serve the papers to the British Embassy in Harare for transmission to Theresa May's government in London. The pressure group wants the British government to release classified documents that might have details about the massacres. Asked to comment on the High Court application, Zimbabwe Justice Minister Ziyambe Ziyambe said,
"What is the application all about? I'm still interested."
In a sign of growing tensions over the massacres, recently the army detained and assaulted some protesters demonstrating against a visit by President Mnangagwa to the southern region. The 75-year-old Zimbabwean leader has yet to comment on the issue since coming to power in November in an army-backed takeover. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Zimbabwe's current economic and political system is under pressure to change if the country wants to attract new investors to help rebuild the broken economy. The government will need to build back trust from the international community before investors feel comfortable investing in Zimbabwe. In the last decade, the country struggled with hyperinflation, which left the Zimbabwean dollar useless, forcing the country in 2009 to begin using the American dollars and South African rands. William Atwell is a senior analyst for Sub-Saharan Africa for Frontier Strategy Group, a research and consulting firm specializing in emerging markets. He spoke with me from Cape Town and says it's key for the new Zimbabwean government to reduce uncertainty for investors.
The main political aspects that are hindering investors coming into the country have to do with uncertainty around the government's indigenization policies, which have been rolled out over the past several years. And they essentially seek to force foreign companies to give stakes in those companies to local black businesses or black individuals, black Zimbabweans. So the point being to try and increase local ownership in the economy. Now, it's been quite unclear exactly what the extent of these requirements are, and the goalposts tend to shift from industry to industry and from company to company. So I think the uncertainty that a lot of companies have faced regarding this particular policy has made them quite risk-averse and has certainly contributed to some companies deciding to either reduce their Zimbabwe presence or simply avoid the country as a potential market.
Do you think the country reintroducing its own currency will encourage the international community to invest?
Not at the moment. It has very, very little confidence in the Zimbabwe dollar, and certainly the lack of faith that it had any value whatsoever is partly what drove the hyperinflation in the late 90s and through to the mid-2000s. The problem is there's a lot of association and of bringing in a local currency with that. At the moment, the best bet for the government is to try and increase the supply of U.S. dollars, which both local and foreign businesses have faith in. Previous experiments to try and use more other currencies to try and offset the problems of that have to do with a lack of U.S. dollars, such as using the Chinese currency or using the South African rand, simply haven't been very effective. Local businesses and consumers just haven't had much faith in those. So the best bet they can have is to try and increase the supply of U.S. dollars.
The removal of sanctions, do you think that will increase the trust from investors?
Yes, I think that would have an effect of certainly bringing Zimbabwe, I suppose, a bit out of the woods. Being a country that has sanctions applied certainly brings a lot of stigma with it. I think it's important to understand exactly what those sanctions mean. In the Zimbabwean case, the sanctions are not, it's not a sort of sanctions regime along the lines that, you know, you might see the U.S. applying to Iran or North Korea, which aims to, which has the effect of isolating those markets from international business to some extent. In the Zimbabwean case, the sanctions are primarily targeted at individuals, so specific individuals within the ruling party, which restrict, for instance, their ability to travel abroad or own or manage assets abroad. So the sanctions that are in place don't particularly restrict business in a fundamental way, but they do enhance the stigma around Zimbabwe as an attractive destination. And I think there are sufficient political reforms, and say the US or other major powers decided to reduce some of those sanctions that affect major political leaders in Zimbabwe, that would certainly help to restore some faith in the political system and in the idea that Zimbabwe is a place that is more amenable to doing business.
That was William Atwell with Frontier Strategy Group speaking with me today.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America, Studio 22. I'm Kudzinai Mutetwa in Washington. At 46 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change. The Department of Home Affairs in South Africa is directing entities dealing with Zimbabwe special permit holders to continue rendering services to those whose permits expired on December 31st. Many Zimbabweans with expired permits have had problems accessing their bank accounts and extending their work contracts. As Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, Zimbabweans in the country are applauding the decision.
In a letter, the Department of Home Affairs urges all companies, employers, schools, and banks to continue providing services to Zimbabwe special permit holders. Those permits expired at the end of December. All ports of entry have been notified to allow smooth travel to these Zimbabweans until they receive their new Zimbabwe exemption permits. The new ZEP permits will last until December 2021. However, the department has called on applicants to always carry proof of application to receive services. Mabuto Mapena, chairman of the Zimbabwe Community in South Africa organization, says many permit holders had already experienced problems because of expired permits.
We are happy that the department took this initiative. We had already received complaints, particularly from the municipality of Cape Town, the Northern Cape Department of Education, where people were told that their contracts were not going to be renewed.
ZEP applicant Sifiso Ngwenya says the directive from Home Affairs has brought relief to many.
I'd like to thank Home Affairs about the issue of permits, that they allowed us to stay in South Africa although our permits are expired. I thank you, Home Affairs, for taking care for foreigners in South Africa. Thank you.
In 2010, about 200,000 Zimbabweans who were in South Africa illegally were issued 4-year special permits, allowing them to work, study, and conduct business in the Republic. In 2014, the 3-year Zimbabwe special permits replaced the original permits. Now, those 2014 permits are being replaced by the Zimbabwe exemption permits. According to the government schedule, all ZEP applicants should receive their permits by the end of September 2018. Thuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Foreign Affairs and International Trade Minister Sibusiso Moyo says the government has started working to clear up unpaid salaries, rents, and other bills for its embassies around the globe. Social media users like the idea but have some strong views on the performances of the embassies.
Logic says, good job. You guys have touched on how you will address economic issues. What you have not touched on are governance issues.
Madara says, some are not going to like this comment, but African embassies abroad are known not to assist their people when in need. They even turn them out in the cold weather, only to be picked up by a local to assist.
Chihorimbo says, our embassies are as useless as the function of their foreign affairs ministry, which has never brought any results except ensuring Mugabe's UN presence, but not international business.
Shumba says, come on, just close the not-so-productive embassies for a start long speeches, don't put food on the table. We want action.
Margaret McNeil says, I sincerely hope this means that the staff at the embassies will actually be able to assist people. When applying for information about returning to Zimbabwe, I was told they could not help and that I must contact Harare directly.
Tendekai says, Zimbabwe embassy in Kuwait is very helpful. Please keep it. They assist Zimbabweans and conduct regular visits, saving many of us trips to Zimbabwe to do things like renewing passports and all.
The European Union's chief observer for Kenya's 2017 elections says the process was far from perfect, singling out in particular the country's politicians. As Mohamed Youssef reports for VOA from Nairobi, the EU mission is calling for Kenya to undertake reforms that will strengthen democracy.
Speaking Tuesday at the European Parliament, the EU chief election observer in Kenya, Maria Shaka, blamed politicians for problems with the country's 2017 election.
The Kenyan people, including 5 million young people able to vote for the first time, did not fully enjoy their democratic rights as are legally foreseen for all Kenyans. The electoral process was damaged by political leaders attacking independent institutions and by a lack of dialogue between the opposing sides, with escalating dispute and violence.
The EU mission chief said the process disappointed voters, leading to political confrontations, and the East African nation remained divided. In less than 3 months in 2017, Kenya's Electoral Commission organized two presidential elections. The first poll in August was nullified by Kenya's Supreme Court after it found illegalities in the transmission of election results. At least 15 million Kenyans voted in August, a huge turnout credited in part to technology, as many believe that biometric voter identification and electoral transmission of results would reduce electoral fraud. But Shaka says technology did not help Kenya overcome its fears.
Some had hoped that the use of advanced technologies would increase trust. But technology cannot replace trust, and the lack of testing for capacity and security led to concerns that must certainly be addressed in the future.
In the repeat poll in October, only about 7.6 million of 19.6 million registered voters turned out. President Uhuru Kenyatta won with 98% of the vote after his main challenger Raila Odinga withdrew from the election. With the fear of voter apathy in the future, Shaka says Kenya needs urgent reforms.
I urge Kenyan leaders, as well as Kenya's international partners, to prioritize addressing structural issues as well as strengthening principles such as a stronger rule of law, separation of powers, respect for independent institutions, and of course, the rights and freedoms of the people of Kenya.
The EU mission suggested strengthening Kenya's independent institutions, improving the technology use in the elections, and also improving the election results mechanism. In Kenya, the call for leaders to work together and form an inclusive government has been growing, after Odinga and his running mate vowed to swear themselves in as president and deputy president before the end of January. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is considering legislation to more than double its royalties on cobalt extraction. Under this legislation before the DRC Senate, the royalty for cobalt will go to 3.5% from 2%. It could go to 5% if cobalt is declared a strategic mineral. The DRC produces nearly two-thirds of the world's cobalt, which is critical for rechargeable lithium-ion batteries. Demand for the mineral has surged in the past few years as electric cars have become increasingly popular. Since 2016, the price of cobalt has more than tripled to about $34 a pound, or half kilo. The DRC, one of the world's poorest countries, is rich in minerals. It is Africa's leading producer of copper, which also will see its royalties rise to 3.5% under the new legislation. Mining companies say the new rates will make operations in DRC unprofitable.
Zambian Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization are beginning a cholera vaccination campaign Wednesday, January 10th, to help stop an outbreak of this deadly disease. Latest official figures put the number of cases at over 2,672, including 63 deaths. Lisa Slein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Two rounds of immunizations are planned. At each stage, about 1 million people will be vaccinated against cholera. Most of those who will receive these shots live in or around the Zambian capital, Lusaka, since nearly all of the cases of this fatal disease are centered there. World Health Organization spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says the WHO has helped the government plan the campaign and has trained about 500 health and community workers how to administer the vaccine. He agrees vaccination is an important measure in preventing the onset and spread of cholera. But he says access to clean water, proper sanitation, and good hygiene are fundamental to stopping outbreaks entirely. He tells VOA the government is taking measures to remedy the situation.
First of all, deployed the military to clean up parts of the city where sanitation has been poor, has also closed a market where sanitation was poor, has banned street vending and also public gatherings, and was delaying the start of the new school semester.
Cholera, an acute diarrheal disease, can kill within hours if left untreated. People become severely dehydrated and must have their lost fluids replaced quickly if they are to survive. Lindemeyer says it is critical for people to have access to treatment centers where they can easily be helped through oral rehydration or, in the more serious cases, through intravenous fluids. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kudzinai Mutetwal. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Dabela broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com. We leave you with a song by Mafiki Zola, Love Potion.
Thinking about you, you know that I love you, baby. I'm phone you one more, yeah, I want you, baby. I go do anything for you. Stand by some, yeah. My baby, I've been thinking about you. What is it that you done to me, yo? Oh? Hey, jalonga tamanga, sala tetanga. You pour me a love potion, oh, my babe, I can't stop thinking about you. When dance Antonio, good thing I love you so. It's time to sunny, baby, I've been thinking about you. When dance Antonio. I just can't stop thinking about you.
Baba, you give me the juice, you bring me the juice. On dance, I'm turning now. I just can't stop thinking about you.